Okay, hi everybody. Welcome today. It is April the 22nd, 2025. It is the recovery from relapse meeting, and I am absolutely delighted today to welcome the lovely Lindsay P. Lindsay has a great story of recovery from relapse. She has been in and out of the room since she was a teenager, and she was born and raised in New York. So I am going to hand it over to her now to tell you her story. Okay, Lindsay, take it away, my lovely.
Hi everyone. I am so grateful to be here a couple hours earlier than I thought. But God works in mysterious ways, and I am just beyond grateful to be sitting here with you right now after 40 years of, well, I came back at 40 years old after decades of relapse. And finally, in October of 2023, I found a solution that I found a miracle. And I'm just so grateful to be sitting here right now. I just feel like, despite all the geographical locations between us, we're meant to be here all together. And I just want to thank God for a moment and say, this is so beautiful. And I'd love to share some pictures if that's okay. I'm just getting them up. Okay, so this is me where it all started. I often still have that face on the left most days. But childhood was challenging. I'll get into that. You could go to the next page. I always had a smile on my face though. And there were times that I was able to white knuckle my weight down to a thinner, slimmer size, but it never lasted very long. I remember at my wedding, which was 15 years ago, I or 16 now, my husband and I were on the dance floor. I was 25, he was 26, and he was begging me. He saw how happy I was. He saw that I was like not hating myself and that I wasn't eating myself to death. I mean, he didn't really see the restriction and that it really wasn't easy, but he just was begging me on the dance floor, like, can you please stick to it this time? He didn't mean it in a negative way. He hated seeing me kill myself with food. And I just remember, like, it's the happiest day of our lives. And he's a 26-year-old guy, and we're on the dance floor, and he's literally saying, like, can you keep this up? Can you stay healthy? And I'll never forget that moment because I looked so happy and like how much our disease affects others, So you could go to the next page, please. And then, right before I came into program, I was at my heaviest and my eating had really gotten out of control. I was in massive relapse, and I'll get into why in a little bit, but this is where I was just desperate and unhealthy and had a lot of physical problems and medical problems and always was trying to cover up, always having another day one, basically. And if you want to go to the, I think the one of the last pages, this was me. That was my first Halloween. I know it's very odd that I was dressed up like French fries. But this was me. This has been me since October 2023, living life with the 12 steps. That was my family at this past Christmas. And that first Halloween, I mean, I got abstinent on October 27th. So it was my first week in abstinence. And I had my tea and I had brought all my food with me, and I was just so willing at that time. And we were trick-or-treating, so it's not the easiest day, but I was so God-centered. Like, I had finally had the gift of desperation, and I was surrendered, and there was nothing keeping me going to that Halloween candy. I mean, I was just surrendered is the best way to put it. And the last slide, I think. Oh no, there's two more. So this was just me again since October of that of 2023. That's our family at my daughter's dance competition, and it was just such a gift to actually be able to be centered on her rather than on myself and my food and if I'm dieting, if I'm restricting, if I'm looking for my next fix, how do I look? Why is this so long? Me, 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 me. And to finally be able to make it about her and my family and not be in the food or in the selfishness and self-centeredness that this disease does to me was such a gift. And finally, I just had some like side by sides of before program this time around and since. And same, that's my good friend Jessica and my mom. And you could just see it in my face. I have a genuine smile. I'm not nearly as bloated. And I'm just happy, joyous, and free. It doesn't mean life, you could stop the share. Thank you. It doesn't mean life is perfect. Life certainly gets very lifey, like this morning when I didn't calculate the time difference correctly and I ran on and kicked my intern out of my office. But life gets lifey and I have a program because in the past, I would have, first of all, I probably wouldn't even have showed up to the Zoom. That would have been it. I would have been done. I would have beaten myself up. I would have eaten over it. I'd be thinking about it at 4 in the morning. And now I know that life is not perfect and I'm far from perfect. My higher power is perfect. And my higher power can carry that burden for me. I can let it go and it be an acceptance of myself and of situations. So, just going back to what I had said at the first slide, I did have a really tough childhood and I definitely don't want to stay, I don't want to stay here for very long. But my dad, I guess I can describe him best as a rageaholic. I saw a lot of domestic violence. I'm an incest survivor. And unfortunately, school wasn't very safe for me either. I was bullied. Probably I was an easy target given my home life. And food really was my only outlet. And what I've learned since really studying the big book is that on page 124, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have. Like my dark past isn't just a possession, it's not one great thing that happened, it is the greatest possession I have. It doesn't say how big my house is or how many degrees I have or my abstinent count days. It doesn't say the number on the scale. It literally says that my dark past is my greatest possession. And I just love that. And I just interpret it as my darkest moments, the ones that I just wish I could erase, aren't my burdens. They're actually my greatest assets in life. And, looking back, the same God that was accompanying me, besides me, helping me endure a tough childhood and a tough cha past, has made me who I am today. And not despite or in spite of it, but because of it. Like, due to my childhood, I'm sensitive, I'm empathetic, I'm appreciative, I can see the positives in life, and I don't need to live my life angry about the past anymore because I realize that God always had a bigger plan in mind. So I used to think like my past, my childhood, just all the things that I went through, and I didn't mention them all, obviously, because it's not a Dr. Phil episode, but it hasn't broken me. It's actually built me who I am today. And that's just beautiful. So going back to childhood, I had said that food was my solution. And I got heavier and heavier. And in sixth grade, my mom brought me to Weight Watchers. I remember being called Fatty Four Eyes and being very ridiculed because of my weight at school. And when I lost the weight through Weight Watchers, I got so many positives. The bullying stopped. I started to get attention. I thrived on that validation and acceptance. And I learned that if I can stay thin at a certain weight and I could pretend I'm perfect on the outside, others would accept me. And I became just as high on the external validation as I did on the food. And it was just this horrible cycle of white knuckling myself down to a certain weight and having male attention and others' attention, and then not being able to stay away from the food. And eventually my weight coming back up. And I lived like that for a very long time. I got married, I had my daughter, and at that point, my daughter's 8 now, I said, like, I'm breaking this cycle. This needs to end. I need to show her a healthy relationship with food. I saw my mom and my grandma suffer with this disease, and I was done. I didn't want to pass it down to her. And so I started this healthy relationship with food. However, I only had Humanaid solutions. So we all know how that goes. I'm not capable of having a healthy relationship with food without a power greater than myself. I didn't know it at the time. So I was pretending to have a healthy relationship with food, even though inside I was calculating my next meal, calculating my calories, still struggling. because I didn't have any other tools of living. And I did get down to a healthy weight. However, I had no other tools of living, like I said before, and I had only learned to thrive on either food or male attention. And this led me to a 3-year affair on my husband with a married man. And it was me living a double life, because I didn't know how else to live if I wasn't in the food and I wasn't, and I was getting this attention, and it was almost keeping me away from the food, even though the food was still in and out. It gave me something to want to be thin for, I guess I can say. And I just became very emotionally bankrupt at that time. I wanted that dopamine hit any way I could get it. I was stealing for just the sake of stealing. I didn't need the money. I just wanted that dopamine hit. And I was getting further and further away from my own values. And I thought that lying only mattered if I got caught at that time. And that's just really not who I am. It's not in my heart, but I was behaving in a way that was so removed from my relationship with my higher power. And the truth is, like, I was in pain. And so it had me trying to control every other detail in my life and not control it in a positive way, because I couldn't control my own thoughts or my own feelings, or being a pre I couldn't control my daughter. And I was living in anger and in bitterness, and I lost myself. I placed my confidence in other people's opinions of me, and I was just very unreasonable. I remember a time where my husband made a veggie burger for himself and he didn't make me one. And I was so pissed at him. Like, how dare he? I was so in self, and yet I'm cheating on him with a married man, behind his back, but he didn't make me a veggie burger. How dare he? And it just shows my thinking. I have a thinking disease, and it got so far from me. I think I just felt so out of control with a child and working and living this double life that the train definitely got off the tracks there. Let's put it that way. And I'm sharing my story here with, all of you, 896 people, my deepest, darkest secret, because we have all had a story and we have all had a path, and we can live it. We can be on this path together now. So with that being said, just to finish up the tough part of my life, the affair ended, my husband found out, and now what do I have? I have a husband who's not so happy with me. I don't have that tool anymore of getting that external validation from another man. I have to lose a relationship, a 3-year relationship that I had built. And I gotta say, no one really felt too bad for me. So I had two problems there. I have a food addiction that absolutely requires a miracle. And like I said before, I had no other tools of living, and I just wanted to play God. And so I started eating, and I started eating out of control, and the food kept everything out. It kept the bad out, it kept the good out. It just kept me numb from everything going on. And it just allowed me to be a zombie going through life. And it became to a point where I had a lot of health issues. I gained weight very rapidly. I had pancreatitis. I had to get my gallbladder removed. I had edema in my ankles. It was just not good. And doctors were telling me, you're gaining weight rapidly. You're not gonna, survive this. I mean, I was killing myself with food, but we all know frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And I have a disease, and I was in the disease, and I have an ism, and it's never going to be a wasm. And when I crawled into program, I felt worthless, and I was desperate, and it wasn't even about the weight anymore. I couldn't stop eating. I could not get a handle on my life. And I found my first sponsor, and I said, I will do whatever you tell me to do. I don't care if, forget the scale. If I gain 300 pounds, that's what God wants of me. I can't run my life into a ditch anymore. I have to give my life over. And I've learned that I have a physical allergy and I have a mental allergy. So, I have a phenomenon of craving that afflicts me once I start eating. But I also have an emotional behavioral allergy where I have this mental twist that I think I can control it. And I had to surrender to the fact that I couldn't. As the big book says, we are without defense against the first drink. So what I've learned since coming to program is that, a normal eater might overeat at a party, they might indulge on vacation, they might have too many of this, too many of that. But when they're full, they eventually stop and their mind isn't consumed by food 24/7. Before they eat, during their food, after their food. Just for me, it was such a mental and emotional battle, and it did not switch off. Like it was an obsession, it was a comfort, it was a torment. It called me when I wasn't hungry anymore, and it pulled me when I was stressed out, when I was bored. It was like my emotional regulator. And I thought it would make everything better. The food would whisper to me. It would say, just go here, just have this. But it only left me drowning in shame and regret. It's like, it's just that promise every night that it will never happen again, knowing deep down that this cycle continues and continues. So it becomes a war, inside my mind. And I've been removed from that. I've had that obsession removed now, thank God. And I can never forget it because I never want to believe that I have any power to control it. Because once I believe I have any power, not only to control my food, but to control anyone or anything or any situation, that's when I take my power back. And that's when, and self will always blocks God's will for me. So I just want to say from the big book, it says, we have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short-term time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. So I just got back from a 10-day trip to Disney World and a few other places with my family, and there couldn't be any lurking notion that I can have the ice cream everyone was having, or the drinks, the frothy drinks on the beach. That is not for me anymore. I cannot go back to that lifestyle, because who knows when I will ever come back to it. And I have to tell you, that was very sad at first in my recovery. I was really lamenting the food. I was very sad. I knew I had to give it up, and I was surrendered, because I had that gift of desperation. But I remember being in the shower crying over pizza and ice cream and thinking, and I had to keep telling myself, I'm not giving it up forever. I mean, truthfully, I am. But in the moment, I had to tell myself, I'm giving this up for 24 hours, and I could do anything for 24 hours. And I continuously accrued 24 hours, and now I don't have that craving anymore. Oh, of course, once in a while, I'll say, ooh, that looks good. But as the big book says, I recoil like a hot flame, and I do whatever it takes to get out of that mindset. And those mindsets are so few and far in between. But if I could only knew, if I only knew that when I was so sick and suffering in the food, when the food was just calling me so loudly, it doesn't call me loudly anymore. But I've also learned through these steps that food isn't the way to nurture myself, because it really doesn't nurture myself. These 12 steps have given me a way to nurture myself. And I could get rid of that guilt and shame because it's not a moral issue. And the doctor's opinion in the big book is all about that. It defines our problem, and it also clearly states that this is not an illness because I lacked willpower, because I was lazy. I remember a therapist once told me it's not my priority. This is a disease, and it's permanent, it's progressive, and it's fatal if it's not dealt with in the way that the big book suggests. So when I came to program in October of 2023, I realized that I, as the big book says, I stood at the turning point, and I asked God's protection and care with complete abandon, meaning I turned all my I wants into I wills. I did my morning meditation, my prayer, even though at that time I did not have a strong relationship with my higher power. I was mad at my higher power. I mean, how dare he give me this childhood? How dare he have my husband find out about this affair? Why does my husband hate me? I mean, I could have gone on and on about why I was so angry at God.
Got 10 minutes left.
Oh my God, that went fast. But what happened was I just said to God, I'm willing to give you a chance. You know, I'm willing to, I was honest. Like a lot of people say to me, I don't have that connection with a higher power. And I say, well, I didn't either. All relationships take time. And so, yes, there's still some days where I sit in meditation and I'm doing my grocery list and thinking about the next thing I have to do. But I continuously do it day in and day out. And I've built that relationship with my higher power just by telling my higher power, I'm not sure of you. And I'm not sure if you really love me or that if you care. But if you do care, you know, please help me get some sanity today. Please help me accept this situation. Please help me be of service to others. And that's another big piece of my program since coming in. I seek what I can bring to situations, not when I could take out. So if there's a meeting and there's not much recovery in it and they're not talking about the big book, rather than complaining to another fellow, like, I don't really like that meeting, I say, well, what can I bring to that meeting rather than what can I take out of it? Or if I'm on an outreach call and I'm just not clicking with the person, you know, I could still have boundaries and maybe we're not the best match, but I can also say, well, what can I bring to this person today? Well, I find myself, if I'm in Target, I start folding the close up a little bit. I start, if I'm ordering coffee, I start, you know, fixing up the shelf. And that sounds a little crazy, but think of where I came from, you know, having a double life, cheating on my husband, being an absent mother because I was in the food. And now I'm finding joy in serving others because, you know, the world is a scary place right now. And the best thing I can do for this world is to give it a healthy Lindsay. And the best thing I can do for this world is bring my own health and my own godly actions into this world as much as I think my God would want me to have. So, you know, I think the most important part of me speaking today is just to say we all have a story. Now, I'm not unique. But we don't have to go through any of this alone anymore. You know, the shame and guilt that I used to live in and the secrets that I had, and now I'm sharing it with 100 people. We can all be together as a beacon of hope in each other's lives. And I don't know if anyone here has ever heard the full serenity prayer, but after it says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, blah, 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 it says, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace. So, pain is the admission to every 12-step program, I think. But we get to bond here on our weaknesses. We, you know, I once heard a quote, humility is not thinking less of myself, it's thinking of myself less. And I'm not here because I'm better or more worthy than anyone or that I found the magic solution because I didn't. I found willingness. And I found me on my knees begging to God and realizing that my program doesn't need to look like everyone else's. Like, for instance, some people have that quiet time in the morning for 30 minutes. That's awesome. I don't do that. And that doesn't mean I'm doing program wrong. I do about 5 to 7 minutes in the morning, 5 to 7 minutes between my two jobs, 5 to 7 minutes at night. And that works for me. And a lot of times I get calls like, tell me what I'm doing wrong. Why haven't I found, you know, why haven't I had the miracle yet? And I think it's because we have a very unique relationship with ourselves and with our higher power, and not every relationship looks the same. So yes, it's important, of course, when we first come in to follow our sponsor's guidance because the disease is very loud at that time. However, as I've progressed, and it's only been what, a year and a half, I've just learned that I can do things in the way that work for me as long as I pass it by my sponsor and I'm not taking the steering wheel, I'm bringing it to God. And I can put my head on the pillow knowing that I'm doing the best I can. And I just love how the big book says that the broad highway. I just want to bring that up because I had just said that we're all in this together. And the big book talks about this broad highway. And I think of all of us together on this broad highway where none of us are beeping at each other and honking at each other and trying to merge in, like when I used to commute to and from Queens, New York. We're all on this highway together. There's room for us all. And we can place our trust in each other and we can place our trust in God and turn our will over to our higher power And that's the most beautiful part of this program, I think, is the fellowship, because I can make a phone call and share genuinely how I'm feeling. And the other person will say, I'm so glad you said that because I was feeling the exact same way. And that's where I'm so grateful. And I also believe that gratitude is acceptance in action. Like, I am grateful to have you all here. I'm grateful for this 12 steps. I'm grateful for my higher power. But I also, on the flip side of the coin, practice acceptance. And that acceptance means accepting that no one's perfect. We're all here. We're all here because we have a disease, right? And not every outreach call is going to go perfectly. Not every meeting is going to go perfectly. Not every share is going to go perfectly. And I can't expect myself to be perfect or anyone else. So when my husband still has feelings about the affair and he's still upset, I can't turn to him and say, well, I'm recovered now, get over it. I have to give him his space. And I want to give him his space because I want to be in acceptance. And as long as I'm in acceptance, then I'm in serenity. So, serenity, acceptance, and gratitude. And it's not always easy. I had really bad pneumonia this a couple months ago this winter, and I was so mad at God, and I had to continuously try to turn to God and use it to have greater dependence on God and say, like, okay, what are you trying to teach me here? What can I do today? That, maybe I can't do what I can every single day. And how can I relieve the guilt of not being at work or not being a present mom? And that's when life gets lifey and it's not all fun, it's not all roses, but I try to dial in and really connect and connect with fellows and ask how they've gone through similar situations. Like, I'm trying to say it takes work, it's not just easy. It's not like God's like some divine firefighter who came in and just got rid of all my problems. But at the same time, I feel like God has risen my character where I can deal with those problems now. And sometimes I can't. And sometimes I just go in bed and cry, and that's okay too. It's that I don't have to live under the guise of numbing myself anymore and hating myself and starting over the next day. And this is accessible for anyone. Anyone who's willing to give over the illusion of control and anyone who's willing to surrender, there's a miracle out there. And I truly believe it because if I can get abstinent and I can have recovery, trust me, anybody can. And so I just want to end by saying again that this program isn't about being perfect, it's just about taking small, meaningful steps in the right direction, no pun intended. I thought I had to be perfect all the time, and there's no such thing as perfection. If I can leave you with that, it's the most important thing because God is the only perfect entity, and there's nothing we can do to remove God's love from us, and there's nothing we have to do to earn it, and that's beautiful. But other than that, there's no perfection. And I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so glad we're on this broad highway together. I'm sorry that I got a little late and I was a little flustered, but I hope that I was able to at least instill the message that we can all imperfectly find peace and serenity despite what our life and childhood looked like before. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, Lindsay, thank you so much. What a message of depth and weight. And I was just pointed to a paragraph in Working with Others, page 100. It says, if you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So we will stop the recording there.